This is CliffCentral.com.
She works hard for the money. So hard for it, honey.
Wow. All right, Andrea. Lay it on us. Tell us about the Brexit with 2 days of hindsight. And I know that you and Mabali were drinking on the roof of your building.
Yeah, because we had to.
To make the pain go away.
That sounded like a lot of fun, Anthea.
It was huge fun.
I'm sure one day some of us might get invites too.
Mabali, you threw me under the bus. Eh?
No, I did not. I absolutely did not. They're just feeling precious about it.
All right. So, okay.
You think you know someone.
I'm fine with it.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. So, let's go. Where do we begin with the Brexit?
It was an unmitigated disaster on Friday. I mean, there were stocks that opened 18% lower. So if you wanted to sell, you didn't even have a chance. It fell in a heap. That was Capital & Counties. Investec was down 12-13% at one stage. I think it closed about 9% down. Barclays PLC in the UK, Standard Chartered, the banks, wow, 34% down on Friday morning. It did bounce a little bit. So here's the question. After Brexit, is Barclays really worth a third less of what it was on Thursday?
No.
That's the question. Well, how do you know? So the big question, of course, is, or all the questions, are how much is it going to cost British companies and British banks to do business in Europe? So there was a lot of talk at Morgan Stanley on Friday because they have something called passporting privileges. And what it means is that they can have a head office in London and do business anywhere in Europe, any of the EU 28, now 27
right.
EU countries.
Right.
But what Morgan Stanley have to do now is that they have to open subsidiary branches in whichever country in Europe they want to do business. There was an article that went out on Friday saying that Morgan Stanley were going to move 2,000 jobs between Ireland and Frankfurt. Morgan Stanley came out afterwards and said that that's not completely true. They don't know, first of all, how many they're going to have, if they're going to have. It's going to cost them money to move people, to open offices in every country. And also...
But they're not going to stop doing business with Europe. And Europe's not going to stop doing business with them.
But it will be more expensive.
Well, in the short term. But in the long term, you know, sometimes principle against pragmatism is something worth taking note of. I mean, in this case, if you were an English person and you live in, I don't know, Bridgehampton or something, and someone says to you, there's a bunch of people in Brussels who are going to decide on whether or not you should pay X, Y, and Z as a part of your taxes, and what will go to forming a European Union army, which they were trying to do. Surely you should be able to say, no, I'm sorry, that's nonsense. And you can't. And once you're in, you can't complain about it. Once you can't leave halfway through. This is kind of their last chance.
But it's not like you don't have a say. Like, everybody has representation at the EU.
Not so really.
You
the
get
commission...
to discuss, you get to decide amongst yourselves. So David Cameron or his ministers would have sat on the EU Commission and said, well, actually, no, we disagree with this and we like that. I think the issue is the one currency. I don't think trade agreements are the issue. So sure, if you have one currency, one interest rate, then it's very hard to do business. Then it's very hard to grow your economy.
But they've never had the same currency as Europe.
Well, exactly, right? So then what's the problem?
There isn't one. And that's why I'm saying it's not a big deal. They'll figure, you know what, if you want to do business, you'll do business. Don't tell me the banks aren't going to keep doing business with Europe because they're not going to make money out of it. And if they're going to have to establish peripheral and satellite offices all over Europe, if it's still profitable for them, they'll do it.
Sure.
So to argue that, oh, it's going to cost them more and therefore they shouldn't do it and Brexit's an unmitigated disaster for them it's like saying, well, if doing business with Angola is too difficult, we should just not do business with Angola.
Yeah. But the whole point of globalization is that you want to make things easier. You want to do it so that... So the other issue is tax, the tax implications as well. So if you are an EU member and you're doing business with the EU or other countries in the EU... then you have one kind of tax law that you abide by. If you are now British and you're outside of the EU and you're doing business with France, Germany, Spain, Portugal, you name it, you now have to apply for tax submissions in every single country.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is much more difficult to do business. And quite frankly, I was thinking about like long term. I don't think it's that big a problem. So I'm with you. Mm. Like short to medium term,
like it's storm in a teacup stuff for now.
Well, you know,
a
market,
British teacup.
The market hates uncertainty. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. You saw what happened on Friday.
Well, the market just are embarrassed they read it wrong.
Yeah.
Again, the market's embarrassed they read it wrong. The media are embarrassed they read it wrong. And everybody just completely got the British mood wrong.
Yeah. So from an investor point of view, definitely I read this one wrong and I would not have expected it.
And you weren't alone.
Yeah, everybody, almost everybody got it wrong. And so, but I don't know if I'm embarrassed, as in I'm uncertain. Like, I don't really understand what has fundamentally changed. How much is it going to cost Morgan Stanley to do business now? What are the implications for this company that I hold, Capital & Counties? So they still have great properties in the center of London, but what does it mean? And there's a couple of things that I can figure out. So one thing, the pound has fallen by 10%. So now I know that there's going to be inflation in the UK. The banks have turned around and said they want lower loan to value. So if you're going to buy property in the UK before you could take out a 90% mortgage on the value of the property, now the banks are going to want a 20% deposit.
80% mortgage, yeah.
So it's going to cost more. It's going to be more difficult. And it'll keep the property market subdued for a while, I think. I think interest rates are going to be lower or stay lower for a while, so that might help the property market. But because of this uncertainty, where you're going? And the property market really is an interesting one, because I think the, especially London property market, really has been buoyed by foreigners buying.
Yeah.
Are foreigners going to want to buy? Do they feel secure enough that they will be able to repatriate the money when they sell? Nobody knows these things, right? I tell you what, if you are a property buyer, now is definitely the time, though.
Yeah. Well, if you've got some cash lying around and you want to buy in the UK, now is it.
Yeah. You're getting 10% more value for your money, but then the banks are going to ask you for a bigger deposit and you're not sure about the repatriation and the taxes.
And you know, the other thing about this Brexit that strikes me is that everybody's talking about how it's Britain that are letting everyone down and Britain are exiting and this is not great for European unity and all the rest of it. But the French are going to follow suit soon. The Dutch will follow suit after that. The Swedes are out.
Do you really think
it's going to happen? Yeah.
So there's a part of me, from a French point of view, I think if they called a referendum at this stage, they'd vote out.
Right.
But that's emotive. Because for the French, it's all about kind of having immigrants and that's the issue with the French. No doubt about that. There's a part of me that thinks, well, maybe the rest of the EU will see what happened to Britain and go, oh, we don't want to wipe £125 billion off our stock exchange, because that's what happened on Friday. We don't want our pensions to suddenly fall in a heap. And by the way, what Jonathan Witt said was very interesting. He said that the market was actually up last week, which it was. It was down 3.5% on, or 3.15%, whatever, on Friday. For the week, it was still up. But for the year, it's down about 10%.
Okay.
So it depends on the time you're measuring. There's no doubt kind of that is an interesting thing. And also what he said about the passporting, sure. If I was in the EU right now, I'd make the Brits apply for a visa. But that's just me, because I'm South African and they make me apply for a visa, right? Like, you can, Nicaraguans travel to Europe without a visa. So they're not going to make the Brits apply.
I think that the measurement that will be interesting would be to see Friday this week, as compared with the end of close of markets on Friday last week.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we'll have some idea.
Yeah, more or less what the market's thinking. But the truth is, it's a long-term game.
Right.
And you're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen. So, of course, Moody's downgraded Britain's credit rating on Friday to negative outlook. And already that's going to have an impact, right? So cost of capital is going to go up for them. So banks, businesses are going, and the government are going to pay more for borrowing money and for doing business. Mm-hmm. And that fundamentally has an impact on shares, on the economy. There's a lot of talk about Britain and now the world going into recession because of that extra cost and the nervousness around doing business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Politically, I think it's very interesting. Like the fact that Cameron, and I'm no political analyst, but the fact that Cameron resigned, it's as if he's checkmated Boris, right? So he said to Boris, right, so this is what you wanted, you're getting it. If you now have to run for the presidency. If you don't run, well, then you look... Oh, sorry, Prime Minister. Yeah. if you don't run, you're going to look stupid. If you run and lose, then you look worse. And if you win, by the way, now you have to invoke Article 50. And good luck with that. Because if this country goes into recession, it's your fault. So Cameron's played it, I think, fairly well. And how?
But if that's what the people of Britain want, you know, who are the politicians to say to them, oh, no, we know better?
Sure.
This was a referendum. Let's not forget, this was not a bunch of politicians in Brussels who are ensconced bureaucrats who make decisions for people who they don't even speak the same language as. This is the people of England deciding what they wanted.
It was
very close. Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland.
But it was very close, all right?
Of course it was, but there's still a margin of error.
Yeah.
You know, 4% can matter in a market.
Sure, absolutely.
So all I hear so far is this is going to cost us money.
But that's the point of doing business. I mean, like expenses versus revenue.
No, but you've decided as a country, this is the way you want to go. And in order to get where you want to go, it's going to cost you some money. Well, that's what you got to do. What's more pragmatic than that?
Yeah, for me, this whole kind of reversing of globalization, just that's the part that kind of kills me. Like, I want to live in a world where I can travel wherever I want to and do business wherever I want to. And this definitely feels like a reversal of that and then back to nationalism. And as you say, if France had to vote now, they probably would vote out. Of course, if you're British and you're looking to go on holiday in Europe, well, guess what? It suddenly got 10% more expensive.
Oh, well, that's gonna hit those people who love going to Ibiza for the weekend.
There you go. And Benidorm and wherever the else they go.
Exactly. Where? Benidorm.
And Mallorca, right? It's all cheap. that's kind of where it is. And markets are going to stay volatile for a while longer.
Well.
So they're estimating that $2 trillion was wiped off the global stock market on Friday. And that's because it really is about this risk-off trade. So now what you're seeing is people going, oh, the world is a very uncertain place. These things can happen, possibly. Lots of people saying because of this, it could show that Trump could be the next president of the US. But that's probably another discussion. And so what they're doing is they're moving away from risky assets like equities and going into safe haven, gold or bonds.
But Anthea, when a trillion, how many trillion?
$2 trillion. Dollars.
$2 trillion was wiped off. Is that because the market put their bets on the wrong numbers? Or is that because a vote was taken?
It's kind of the same thing. So the market said, there's a vote being taken. We think it's going to go this way. It'll all be fine.
So the market should be the ones punished, not the people who voted for an exit.
No, because the market, the market is saying, if it's a yes vote and we're all fine, or an in vote and we're all fine, then things carry on as they are. If it's no and they have to exit, then it costs more, the uncertainty of doing business, and things do change.
But then all these people who manage money all over the world maybe should have said to their people, we think it's going to be a no. We think it's going to be an exit. So put your money into gold and put your money into this and put your money into that.
So what I was getting at was that exactly that. So people have put their money in gold and into bonds. And what you're looking at now is that potentially US treasuries are the, in inverted commas, or Swiss bonds are the safe haven bets. And what happens when everybody rushes to a bond market is that the yields drop. So where before, if you were buying American bonds, you were getting 2% for your money. You were getting 2% yield. Before, if you wanted to be in equities, you were thinking you could get 10%, 15%, maybe 20%. Right. Now you're getting 2%. If everybody then goes to these U.S. bonds, the safe havens, you're going to probably end up with what? 0.5%? Are you happy getting 0.5% a year on your money? And by the way, this is another thing we don't talk about, which we really should. South Africa is a good example, because if you are getting 4% on your money in South Africa in the bank, 4.5%, call it.
Right.
And inflation is over 6%, you're getting 2% poorer every year. So sure, safe haven assets are nice to a point because you don't lose money, but you're not making money either. In fact, potentially you're getting poorer.
Okay. All right. But then this is the same as old Dangote in Nigeria losing out because of the oil price drop.
Yes.
Not his fault.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Nothing to do with him. And he just loses as a result of the deal.
Yeah.
I do see that the rand to the dollar is 15.25 this morning.
The rand was an interesting one on Friday because immediately it weakened by 10% or 7.5%, and then it came back all the way to 14.98 or something, so below 15, and again, and then of course weakened, and now this morning 15.27. So effectively, a weaker rand, kind of, yeah. That I understand. That part I totally get.
All right, and the pound to the dollar, 1.34.
Yeah, so that's quite something, you know.
Where was it
before? The pound is, 144, I think we were talking last week Wednesday.
Okay, so 10 pence more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On every dollar.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's the same, the pound is the same as for us with the rand, right? Mm-hmm. We have a weaker rand, we're net importers, and therefore inflation goes up because we're paying more for things that we import, and that's how it is. I suppose in the long term, if you're an exporting nation, then for your export sector or industry, it's good because the weaker currency is good for exporters.
Someone says that the Brexit could be followed by the Grexit, Deportugal, Italy, check out.
I like that.
Austria, Finnish, Slovak out, Latvia, Belgium, and only Romania will stay.
I like checkout.
All right, let's look at what happened on our markets here.
Yeah, so we took a bit of a beating. Banks and retailers obviously were the ones that were under pressure the most. Our All share on Friday was down 3.6%, which means that for the year, we're still up 5%. So year to date for 2016, that's okay. And we did see some big negative moves. There were a few things, obviously Capital & Counties. Barclays was down 4%. Brett was down 5%. Old Mutual was down 7.5%. There were a few stocks that were fairly resilient. Zeta, but that's because they put out an announcement. Sun International ended up slightly up. Astoria, but that again, the weak rand, so people are running kind of to safety. Mediclinic didn't come off as much as I thought it would, so I was quite relieved about that. In fact, the hospital group were fine. So it's kind of where we are. Naspers, unfortunately, was the big one. It was down 1.5%. But then Naspers reported after market closed on Friday. So this is interesting because we've been waiting to see what happens here, right? The big thing they said was that they're looking to boost their international internet business. So 70% of their revenue still comes from internet businesses. They spend about $500 million per year in acquisitions. If you've got a good internet business, you know where to go and sell it. And as we predicted, this concern about the pay TV or DSTV, so for 2016 already, they've lost 288,000 subscribers. And I think that's a combination of, one, them putting up their prices without any warning last month or the month before. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the consumer under pressure, and I don't think that will change in a hurry. And then I believe, and the stat I haven't seen, but I've heard kind of, is that 90 or over 90% of new, what are the machines called? Explorers? What are those boxes called?
Yeah, DSTV Explorers.
Yeah, the actual boxes are being sold to already, to people who already have them. So this is their second one. In other words, they're not getting new subscribers, which of course is a problem. And no doubt the Showmaxes have made a dent in kind of this DSTV. So people are beginning to feel the pinch, basically, and it's bad for DSTV. That is the problem. Their revenue, they started reporting in dollars, so it's really hard to calculate kind of where it's going to be. But they said revenue was up 21%, which for Naspers overall.
That's great.
Exactly.
Nobody's complaining about that.
Yeah, so very much more based on internet businesses and the fact that they own 34% of Tencent is what's keeping them afloat and not the pay TV business.
Right.
Which,
Carla wants to know what happened at the PSG AGM.
Wow, that's really impressive, Carla.
People are smart, what can we say? People are smart, Anthea. They want only the best.
Okay, so it was a fairly positive thing. What's happening now is that they've decided to internalize the management fee from Zeta. Zeta will issue 208 million new shares, which they'll give to PSG on an average weighted basis. The fee will be reduced. It was all a good thing, very basically. You know, there was an issue with a management fee that they were paying. So long term, good for Zeta, I think. PSG kind of, it's fine. You know, it's okay. Okay. I can't believe that. That's quite a technical question.
I know, there
wow,
he is.
Very impressive.
Stella Capital?
Yeah. So Stella Capital announced the other day that they had increased their stake in Tor Industrial Holdings from 32 to 35. And what that means, it has now triggered a requirement for Stella to offer all the other or the minority shareholders to buy their shares in Tor. So that's kind of just the regulation. They were a little bit cheeky. They said that they were going to offer a R2.25 a share, which is just barely 2% premium, Tor shares now, to where it closed the day before, which is very cheeky of Stella. Hmm. Normally, there's a nice little markup in there, but good for Stella shareholders, for sure. Not so great for Tor shareholders. And the decision now, if you're a Tor shareholder, you get to decide, do you want to sell your shares to Stella Capital for 2% premium, or do you want to hold on to them, and then hopefully they'll make you a higher offer? If Stella can buy Tor shares at R2.25, definitely earnings accretive.
Right. In other words, hold on.
Well,
if you were a Tor shareholder, you'd say hold on.
Wait, no, well, much of a tough one to guess. Very difficult.
All right.
We'll see how that goes.
And I see Steinhoff are not going to be able to get Poundland at the offer that they've made.
Yeah. So Poundland shareholders turned around and said, no, we're not. This is the Stella Tor situation. Poundland have said, well, actually, no, we're not going to sell our shares to you. If you want to, you must buy them in the market and pay a premium for them, whatever. Steinhoff came back and said, well, actually, now that Brexit has happened, we're not so sure we want to buy you anymore.
Oh.
Which is, again, like, there's a lot of kind of politicking and kind of thumping of chests going on here.
All right.
If I was Steinhoff, I probably would walk away from it, quite frankly, unless I can buy it for cheap. And yeah, that's pretty much kind of the news, I guess, for our stock market on Friday.
Thank you very much, Anthea.
My pleasure.
Excellent. We'll see you later.
Tomorrow.
Very good. There you go. It's Anthea Gardner with a look at the money shot.
This is CliffCentral.com.